Welcome to episode 396 of Troubadours and Raconteurs, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. On this week's installment, we have a grand conversation with our resident storyteller, Little Star Run. She shares part two of her story, Are There Angels Among Us? We have an EW essay titled Jade Pond. We share a Navajo legend about first man, first woman, a poem called Upness, as well as some great tunes. So nice to have you with us. Let's get to it. Episode 396 of Troubadours and Raconteurs. I read in the Tao this morning, as the sun was rising in the east to my right, my back to the world outside the window above the couch I sit. The sound of early traffic in automobiles, people operating those machines in pursuit of a new day. I read about the jade pond inside a person and how its stillness can transform a fire from one's mind and heart into steam energy of spirit to steadfastly bolster this existence, I think. I hear myself breathing as I watch my belly, fattened by distress, move beneath the red tight shirt I've been wearing for several days, up and down, up and down. I wonder, worry, if I am a good person, if I am making wise decisions, whether this life of mine is being lived as it should. The thoughts of my desires, fears, and hopes are mundane in their consistency and ordinary roots, though I suppose it exemplifies how connected I truly am to this species of ours in this physical world. With these words and symbols, these references and foibles, that if not all-consuming, breathe opportunity into an experience over the years as one dances with their stead. And the jade pond sets there still, its depth unknown, its volume profound to such a man as me. Star Run, is that you?
Yes, EW, it's me.
So good to have you on Troubadours and Rock on Tours yet again, a regular contributor to the program. She is a songwriter, a musician, an artist, an actress, and of course our resident storyteller. And I understand we're going to hear part two of Are There Angels Among Us? The wonderful story you told us last time. So how are you?
How am I? I've been better, but I've also been worse. So I'm just kind of grateful, I think, for each day. And we're all going through so much right now, that I think just being grateful and present in the moment and appreciating and loving and experiencing is all we can really do right now,
Yeah, you definitely. There's so many things that we all have going on day to day, but the one thing for sure that we're all experiencing is the pandemic. I suppose that's one of the main references you're making.
Well, yes, of course.
Yeah.
Amongst that, the unrest in our country, the unrest in our souls, from everything that we're experiencing. And yeah, I feel like being present and grateful really has just been the only way to be, not projecting too far ahead, because you can't do that anyway, and we forget that.
Yeah, I know you must be upset that your candidate, Donald Trump, didn't win.
Oh, don't fool the listeners. If they don't know me, they might take you seriously.
Was unkind. I was trying to prompt you into saying, "What?
A stab to my heart. Oh,
What?"
no.
No, just kidding. I know you're a good person.
Well, we don't want to judge anyone. People have their beliefs for certain reasons, and yeah, I definitely don't want to be judging anyone else's experience, although I don't agree with the way they act.
Yeah, it's a tough one. It really is. I hear you about the judging part, though you have to question seriously, and I feel comfortable questioning seriously. You don't need to. I'll do it. People who support Donald Trump, I have to question you. I have to, you know?
Oh, I mean, I do agree with that. It just, I feel like energetically it puts me in a place that I don't want to be, like I'm giving out an energy that is mirroring their negativity. And so the way that I, try to deal with that is to just not be on that level, just
Yeah.
not be there,
No.
and just put my energy towards a higher level, a better level. And
That's
I feel
smart. That's
it's a trap.
smart.
It's a trap sometimes too, because when you receive negativity, you feel like I gotta respond with negativity. But that's not the way. I don't think that that ever solves anything.
No, I think that's very, very astute of you. And now the pandemic, has that been keeping you holed up, so to speak? You haven't been out doing performances and things of that nature, I'm sure. And I know that's a large part of who you are.
Yeah, that's been a big change for me. I did do one performance at St. Joseph's Center, which was really beautiful for the kids there, and I was really grateful for that performance. It was an outdoor event, socially distanced, and I've just been taking the opportunity to find other ways, to stay creative. I'm working, producing an audio drama, just adapting, to the times.
Yeah, that's what we all need to do, not just sit around and wait and lament. You got to keep moving. You got to keep doing. So that's what we're trying to accomplish right now, with our conversations, week to week through the show, and try to keep connected to one another. It's a joy, really, to be able to talk with you today, and I look forward to hearing part two of your story, true story. Are there angels among us? Do you wanna delve in? You wanna go there?
Yes. So very tiny little recap for Are There Angels Among Us 1. For people who didn't hear it, it was on another episode. I had some experiences in New York City at a very difficult time in my life where I came across some angels in human form. And I couldn't deny that experience. Everything about it spoke loudly to do what we know angels to be, energetically. And also their names were Michael and Gabriel, random strangers, So it was quite a coincidence. You can listen to that on another episode. I'm not sure what number that was.
I'll find that while you talk. I'll find that. I think
Okay.
it was in the it was 370 something, if I recall correctly. But go ahead.
Okay. So, after that experience, I left New York City and I went to Oregon, to Portland. And I was living in Portland. I was actually just visiting at first. And when I had gone out there, I was on a new chapter in my life. I wasn't really sure who I was, what I was doing. My time in New York City actually had confused me quite a bit. Because I saw a lot of things that I didn't agree with, and I was trying to find my own place within all of it, as an artist, And so when I was out in Portland, I was only supposed to be there for a few weeks, and unfortunately, and I know this is a sensitive subject and it's not the correct month for remembrance, but September 11th happened while I was out there. And it was very strange to just, be in a position where I had just left the city that was experiencing such tragedy of monumental proportions. And that's an understatement. And I saw it from an outsider's perspective in a way because I was around all these people who weren't directly close to New York too, And while there was sentiment, there wasn't that direct connection. So it was kind of strange, There were people out there that were saying like, oh, those are just like government cronies working there, and they deserve, this sort of liberal, well, hyper liberal, sort of almost, I don't want to say anarchist, but people that just oppose, like almost anti everything.
Right. And we have those on both sides, the right and the left.
Yeah, oh, definitely. So, that there was something I couldn't even understand that a lot of these people around me were saying, and I just said, well, it's loss of human life. Those are families, those are people, regardless, of any circumstance, regardless of who they're working for or what they're doing, they're just trying to live. And so I started to be at odds with that environment out there as well. I'm thinking, oh, like, where am I supposed to be?
Was it much different than New York City?
Oh, well, it's very different now. I would say that it's more like New York City now to be in Portland than than it was back then. Portland was still very, I mean, it was kind of like a hippie place, but it was also kind of progressive. But then you also had sects of people there that were kind of, anti everything and just anti participation in life, And anti-compassion, in my opinion. So this kind of got me feeling that, okay, I left, I need to go back. I was around all these people. Obviously, New York was so close to my heart. I was feeling that maybe I had made the wrong decision by leaving. But you couldn't really travel at that time. They recommended. No one knew what was going to happen, so they recommended not traveling for a period of months after that. because there was so much fear of, you know, more, I'm going to say attacks. I'm not sure, you know.
Right. We're also trying to figure out who was the enemy and where was the enemy.
Exactly. It was such a period of uncertainty. And so I had to stay in Portland and I had to adapt to the times, you know. I wasn't going to travel. And I'm like, okay, I had only really planned to visit for a little while, but then I couldn't even go back. So I said, okay, I'm just going to stay here. And that's actually when I started doing the circus performance stuff that I ended up doing for a number of years.
Yeah, I love those stories. So that started in Portland.
Yes, that is where that started.
Because we heard about it in Greece, but you started with the circus performing in Portland. Okay.
That's where I started taking some trapeze lessons, and I started to learn more about the circus acrobatic world. And, you know, this brought me a lot of strength and clarity during that time, which was very uncertain for me. And when they finally did open the travel up again safely, it was around Thanksgiving, you know? So September 11th happened, and then it was a period of about like two months. Let's see. Yeah, two to 3 months, 2.5 months, something like that. I had arrived in Portland in August, almost 3 months. And taking this new skill that I had with me, and I decided I needed to be back on the East Coast, you know? I had so many friends and, you know, people close to me that were going through so much, and I just felt, you know, I need to be there. And I did fly back, and I went first to visit my family in Pennsylvania, and then I took a bus to New York City. And I'm speeding the story along a little bit because the bus is where the story happens. So I just needed to give you some background.
Oh, good stuff.
Okay. And so I'm on a bus commute from Scranton, Pennsylvania to New York City, which is, you know, a lot of commuters for work, you know, going into the city a lot of times. And then sometimes there's just a lot of people, you know, that are traveling or you know, that's their sort of stop off, you know, coming from other places. And, you know, sometimes you get lucky and you sit near somebody that's really interesting. And on this particular trip, there was a man. He was African American. He must have been about 30 something, or maybe early 30s. This is what I'm thinking. I never asked him his age, or, you know, we didn't talk about those kind of details. And he was sitting diagonal from me, not exactly next to me, but diagonal from me. And I noticed something about his energy. His, you know, let's say aura, if you want. But, you know, just something around him, something palpable, visible. I was really struck by it. And maybe he felt me examining his energy, you know. I don't want to get too, like, esoteric about it. But, you know, I definitely noticed. And then he turned towards me. And just started talking to me very naturally. And I said, you know, there's something really different about you and your the way you are. And he said, I need to tell you my story. This was all like in like the first few minutes of talking. And I said, okay. I'm like, you know, because obviously everyone's been on a bus with someone who sometimes can get a little too friendly, let's say, when you don't want to talk.
You don't want to be that one.
Yeah. But I did feel safe within his energy. And I didn't feel that he was gonna, you know, talk my ear off or make me feel uncomfortable in any way. And he said, well, he's like, I've got to tell you that life is amazing and life is beautiful. And this, even just this moment that we're having right now here on this bus is sacred. And me talking to you, just this exchange, this just us, you know, communicating as humans and sharing something with no expectation and just to give is amazing. And I'm starting, at first I was like, whoa, okay, whoa.
Right.
I'm like, yeah, I agree, you know, but it was the strength of his words and where they were coming from that was hitting me really hard. And I'm sorry, you went to say something.
No, I was just kind of affirming what you were saying. That's all.
Oh, okay. I get a little emotional when I talk about this story because it was very powerful. So he said, where are you coming from? And I said, oh, I came from Portland. You know, I had left the city before, you know, the attacks and everything, and now I'm coming back. And he said, well, he's like, you're not going to believe this. He's like, but I was a security guard at one of the towers.
Whoa. Wow.
And in the basement also. So, you know, I'm thinking, okay. At first, he didn't reveal to me, you know, what happened or anything. I was just like, oh, how is he alive? You know, like, this is amazing. I don't even know what to say. And he said, you know, he's like, I lost so many people that day, but my mother, she was my angel. And I said, well, how was that? How was your mother your angel? He said, she had called me and told me to take the day off because I was overworked. I wasn't feeling well, you know, and I, you know, he had a really special relationship with his mother, and she called him and said, you know, I think you really need a day off. I think you know, shouldn't go to work. And not because she, you know, obviously didn't know what was going to happen, but maybe she did. Maybe she had some sort of mother's intuition. I don't know. But so he... You know, he had tears in his eyes when he was saying this.
Mm.
And I couldn't believe it. Yeah.
How old was he? What'd you say?
He was like in his, I would say early 30s or maybe late 20s, maybe early 30s. Yeah, he was young.
So he didn't go into work that day?
Yeah. Yeah.
And... did he share with you how the day went when he was witnessing what was occurring?
I mean, obviously, you know, he was in shock. But he told me what happened to him after, you know, inside, how he felt about his own life after that, and how he felt about connections and people watching over us. And, you know, it was quite strange because, you know, I had that first experience in New York City first. I'm not a religious person, obviously. That's not, I'm spiritual, definitely. I mean, I believe that there are mystical, magical things happening around us all the time. And if we want to say that, you know, angel is the right word for some of those energies and forces, then, you know, that's what I'm using just because it's a reference that people can relate to. But you know, what possessed his mother to call him and tell him that? And, you know, like,
yeah.
Where did that come from? And, you know, a lot of people were, I've told this story to other people, and sometimes they're like, oh, maybe he was making it up. I'm like, I don't think he was, you know, witnessing him and the way he cried and just his energy. And what I could feel from him was just like something you feel off of, you know, like a saint, you know, or someone that really devotes their lives to other people. And he moved me. He was moved within himself. He was probably the kindest person I'd ever met.
You're listening to Troubadours and Rock on Tours with E.W. Conundrum Demure on WFTE Radio, Mount Cobb and Scranton, Pennsylvania. Community radio at its finest.
It was just the way he was telling you the story, or, I mean, what was he doing with his life at that point? You know, you were talking about how he felt inside about him, about his own existence after that occurred, his mother being his angel and saving him from certain death on 9/11. You know, where did he end up after that? Why was he on the bus? All these things come to mind.
Yeah, I know. Well, we didn't talk about so many different things, you know. And it's been a long time. Like, I don't remember some of those details. But I do remember him saying that he was going to change the way that he was living. Not that he was living in a bad way before that, but, you know, just that he realized that his life was a gift and he couldn't waste any of his days.
And this was just several months after 9/11. So it was still 2001, I suppose.
Yeah. So it was Thanksgiving, after that, that holiday, time.
And after the conversation, did you just sit back in your seat and reflect, or where did that take you? I mean, now you've met, what, three? Would it be three angels? Four, perhaps? When you combine the experience in New York City and on the bus from Portland?
Oh, yeah. I remember just being overwhelmed, also grateful that I was able to have that conversation, experience this man's energy, and I felt something similar, that I don't want to waste any days of my life. I want every day to be profound and beautiful, you know. And actually, when I arrived in the city, it was kind of strange because, you know, the sky was still a strange color, and it was surreal. But the energy from people was one of where they're trying to be their higher selves. You know, people were much kinder to each other for a time. It definitely changed. But in those few months afterwards, and I did catch sort of the end of it, you know, coming in November, there was a sense of, we're all in this together. We can, you know, we shall, I don't want to say we shall overcome, but, you know, we shall rise together in some higher humanity. And that was good, just to even experience it on a level that was fleeting. You know,
how do you maintain that sort of mindset and I guess lack of cynicism?
I don't know if we're ready as a species. You know, we seem to not have that stamina to always be that way. You know. What is it about, like, a tragedy or a crisis or something that suddenly we are, you know? And, like, do we always need to have a tragedy or a crisis to feel those feelings? I don't think so. But maybe we just haven't figured it out, you know?
Yeah, I think you're right. We're still evolving in that way. Little Star Run here on Troubadours and Rock Contours, talking about all kinds of interesting aspects of humanity, and super humanity, I suppose, as well, when you start talking about things such as angels. Or maybe not. I think of a phrase that I've heard from Peter Tosh and Bob Marley way back. I hear it still. Almighty man, Almighty God is a living man, right? Or woman, and woman. With the idea being that we do have a lot of greatness in terms of kind behavior and thoughtfulness and wisdom and such inside of us. But it is about maintaining it, about accessing it, about trusting it, and persevering, even when you are not treated so well. So you don't get sucked into that negativity as you started the conversation off, discussing. So, yeah, these stories are nice, and timely, too. We're in that part of the year where we are, looking at Thanksgiving. We are looking at the other spiritual and cultural holidays that cause us, hopefully, or inspire us, probably a better word, to reflect about
Oh, I
who we
just
are.
realized that Thanksgiving is coming up.
Yeah, as we speak, yes, it is.
That's so strange. That's the thing. I'm not thinking that far ahead right now. I'm kind of on this like, okay, today is today. I'm not even, I'm not even a week ahead at this point.
That's very Buddhist of you.
It just seems to be the only thing I can control, is just being present.
Right, exactly. Well put. So, in these last few moments of our conversation, it's gone by already. It always does with us, so smoothly and so quickly, it seems. These last few moments, though, you want to share any insights, any thought, any insights or thoughts with our listeners that connect to where we are at the moment?
Just be present and be grateful and try to be kind to yourself and to others.
Yeah, good stuff. And we hopefully will be seeing each other out and about in the next, I don't know, half year. I'm hoping.
You were going to say several years.
No.
Yes, I don't know what to say or to expect. I hope to see you. Actually, in the circus, they always say like, I'll see you down the road. Like they never when you say goodbye to someone or you're parting with them or something, you say they never say goodbye. It's considered bad luck. So you say, I'll see you on the road or I'll see you down the road. Like on the next tour kind of thing.
Excellent. I'll see you down the road, Little Star Run.
I'll see you down the road, EW.
Take care. Happy Thanksgiving and such.
Happy Thanksgiving. Take care.
now we have a Navajo myth based on a legend reported by Washington Matthews in 1897. It's called Creation of First Man and First Woman. The first people came up through three worlds and settled in the fourth world. They had been driven from each successive world because they had quarreled with one another and committed adultery. In previous worlds, they found no other people like themselves. But in the fourth world, they found the Kasani or Pueblo people. The surface of the fourth world was mixed black and white, and the sky was mostly blue and black. There were no sun, no moon, no stars, but there were four great snow-covered peaks on the horizon in each of the cardinal directions. Late in the autumn, they heard in the east the distant sound of a great voice calling. They listened and waited, and soon heard the voice nearer and louder than before. Once more they listened and heard it louder still, very near. A moment later, four mysterious beings appeared. These were White Body, God of this world, Blue Body, the Sprinkler, Yellow Body, and Black Body, the God of Fire. Using signs but without speaking, the gods tried to instruct the people, but they were not understood. When the gods had gone, the people discussed their mysterious visit and tried without success to figure out the signs. The gods appeared on 4 days in succession and attempted to communicate through signs, but their efforts came to nothing. On the fourth day, when the other gods departed, Black Body remained behind and spoke to the people in their own language. "You do not seem to understand our signs, so I must tell you what they mean. We want to make people who look more like us. You have bodies like ours, but you have the teeth, the feet, and the claws of beasts and insects. The new humans will have hands and feet like ours. Also, you are unclean. You smell bad. We will come back in 12 days. Be clean when we return." On the morning of the 12th day, the people washed themselves well. Then the women dried their skin with yellow cornmeal, the men with white cornmeal. Soon they heard the distant call, shouted 4 times, of the approaching gods. When the gods appeared, Blue Body and Black Body each carried a sacred buckskin. White Body carried 2 ears of corn, one yellow, one white, each covered completely with grains. The gods laid one buckskin on the ground with the head to the west, and on this they placed the 2 ears of corn with their tips to the east. Over the corn they spread the other buckskin with its head to the east. Under the white ear they put the feather of a white eagle. Under the yellow ear, the feather of a yellow eagle. Then they told the people to stand back and allow the wind to enter. Between the skins, the white wind blew from the east and the yellow wind from the west. While the wind was blowing, 8 of the gods, the Mirage people, came and walked around the objects on the ground 4 times. As they walked, the eagle feathers, whose tips protruded from the buckskins, were seen to move. When the Mirage people had finished their walk, the upper buckskin was lifted. The ears of corn had disappeared. A man and a woman lay in their place. The white ear of corn had become the man, the yellow ear the woman, first man and first woman. It was the wind that gave them life, and it is the wind that comes out of our mouths now that gives us life. When this ceases to blow, we die. The gods had the people build an enclosure of brushwood, and when it was finished, first man and first woman went in. The gods told them, "Live together now as husband and wife." At the end of 4 days, first woman bore hermaphrodite twins. In 4 more days, she gave birth to a boy and a girl, who grew to maturity in 4 days and lived with one another as husband and wife. In all, first man and first woman had 5 pairs of twins, and all except the first became couples who had children. And 4 days after the last twins were born, the gods came again and took first man and first woman away to the eastern mountains, dwelling place of the gods. The couple stayed there for 4 days, and when they returned, all their children were taken to the eastern mountains for 4 days. The gods may have taught them the awful secrets of witchcraft. Witches always use masks, and after they returned, they would occasionally put on masks and pray for the good things they needed, abundant rain and abundant crops. Witches also marry people who are too closely related to them, which is what first man and first woman's children had done. After they had been to the eastern mountain, however, the brothers and sisters separated. Keeping their first marriage a secret, the brothers now married women of the Mirage people, and the sisters married men of the Mirage people. But they never told anyone, even their new families, the mysteries they had learned from the gods. Every 4 days, the women bore children, who grew to maturity in 4 days, then married, and in their turn had children every 4 days. In this way, many children of first man and first woman filled the land with people.
Jesus died for somebody's sins, but not mine. Milton, pot of thieves, wild cord on my sleeve, thick heart of stone, my sins my own, they belong to me, me. People say beware, but I don't care. The words are just rules and regulations to me, me. Look at the window, see a sweet young thing hopping on the parking meter, leaning on the parking meter. Oh, she looks so good. Oh, she looks so fine. And I got this crazy feeling, and then I'm gonna make a mind. Oh, I put my spell on her. Here she comes, walking down the street. Here she comes. Come. Jones, call me Mae Mount to May, Marie, Ruth, but I tell you that show. How did you hear them? How did you see? I let my eyes rise to the big tower clap, and I heard those bells chiming in my heart. Going ding dong, 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 ding dong. Full time into my room. When you whispered to me, we took the deep plunge, and oh, you were so cool. Ooh, oh, you were so fun. And I gotta tell the world that I made your mind, 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 made your mind. Yeah.
Glory birds fly in flocks of spirit through magenta clouds cumulus, moving by slowly as the birds soar fast, relative to those natural wonders, as part of the sky that provides an open, vast upness to our sense of reality. Some days blue, others white, gray, magnificent, always moving with seamless verve. Thank you. And there you have it. Episode 396 of Troubadours and Raconteurs with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. I'd like to thank those folks who made this episode possible. First and foremost, our good friend, Little Star Run. Also, I'd like to thank the Navajo Nation and Washington Matthews, as well as these musical artists: Django Reinhardt, Stefan Grappelli, Marshall Crenshaw, Bonnie Raitt, LCD Sound System, Frank Jishi, Raymond Yahtzee, Sam Yahtzee Jr., Sam Yahtzee Sr., Ki Chi Jake and Lena Clark, Patty Smith, the Postal Service, Branford Marsalis and Terrence Blanchard, too. And of course, I'd like to thank you for listening. Until next time, let's give it a go and do our best with this time. Take care.